Feeling under the weather? You can tell a doc that. Actually, for almost everything health-related, checkups, check-ins, and everything in between, you can tell a doc that. For your physical health or for your mental health, you can tell a doc all that. We've got doctors, therapists, specialists, and coaches all available by web or app. Get started today at teladochealth.com. That's teladochealth.com. When life happens and you need care fast, you can tell a doc that. Need help navigating big changes? You can tell a doc that too. From checkups to check-ins and everything in between, for your physical health or for your mental health, you can tell a doc all that. We've got doctors, therapists, specialists, and coaches all available by web or app. Get started today at teladochealth.com. That's teladochealth.com.
Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hey, welcome to the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, everything in the sun relates to you having a happier, healthy relationship with money. I want to thank you for joining us here on Saving with Steve. Thank you for sharing us with your friends and family. It's that time of year. We've got to talk about a lot of stuff. So, folks, there's many people who have lost a spouse. They get divorced and, you know, hey, they're surviving. They haven't dated in a long time. You know, they don't want to repeat getting in the same type of destructive relationship they've had before. The big question is, how do we date? Of a loss of spouse or survivor, it's a big thing. And we have Jessica Yaffa here. You're going to love her. She has two decades worth of experience. She's a two-time author. She's an internationally recognized health relationship expert, speaker, trainer, coach. Jessica holds several positions in leadership in the mental health community, co-founder and president of the nationally recognized nonprofit No Silence, No Violence, former president of the San Diego Domestic Violence Counselors, the CEO of her own company, Jessica Raffi Coaching Institute. And she's been featured on many high-profile talk shows, as well as numerous publications in print, as well as on the web. We're so lucky to have Jessica here. Jessica, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Steve. Thrilled to be here.
First of all, the big thing is this. Everybody I've met that does things like you do has a story and a reason behind it and something that got them motivated to become part of that. So tell us about your journey.
Yeah, I have known that I wanted to be in the helping profession literally for as long as I can remember. My family often jokes that I was using words like inappropriate from the time that I could speak. So have been wired for this work from the very beginning. And as I moved into my later adolescence and young adulthood and was in college and sort of started to really explore where specifically I wanted to be, I was navigating my own journey through what became a very abusive relationship. And so as I then navigated my way out of that relationship and was then a young mom, already a divorced person and trying to just sort of navigate my way through the world, got really clear that I not only had a gifting for this kind of work and began to then have some education behind me, but also now had this lived experience that could really contribute to the way in which I was able to show up for others who I had this real desire to come alongside. So that is where this specific work began. I had a desire and a real purpose in showing up with and for those who were experiencing or had experienced relational abuse, and have really then morphed through additional education and training and years of experience, morphed my career into continuing to have a real specialty in that area, and yet also really being able to focus on healthy relationship development. So not just focusing on sort of the aftermath of relational trauma, but how do we do a really good job of showing up as the best version of ourselves while also navigating challenging moments, hard conversations, maintaining connection during stressful times, whether that be in friendship, in romantic relationship, in our organizational systems, and just feel really grateful to be able to navigate those spaces with folks in a way that feels meaningful.
I was just going to say that's wonderful because so many people, you know, I grew up in the corporate world before I became a sole proprietor and all that stuff. And I worked with many, many, many people. And you could see that some people, doesn't matter what level of I'm going to say a business they're in or who they work for, that toxic communication, that toxic relationship, you see it all over the place. Yeah. And you know what? One of the things that my listeners really want to ask, and I want to ask this right, is they go from one toxic, disruptive relationship to another.
Yes.
One of our viewers actually says, I feel like I'm a carrier for this. And I, not to be funny, but I understand what some people are saying because I know people like that.
Yeah.
So if you would take a moment to kind of break that down, hey, what's going on? What should people recognize? And how, what would be the steps for working their way out of something like that or not repeating that situation again?
Yeah, such a good question, Steve. And I can so relate to your viewers who are navigating this experience that can feel really hopeless, frustrating, overwhelming, and it makes so much sense. You asked me to take a moment to break it down. We could talk about this for days, yet I'll be as succinct as I possibly can. And that is, human beings, no matter how smart we are, no matter how educated we are, no matter how much money we have, no matter our faith background, no matter the environment in which we live or come from, when we have two options, unhealthy connection or no connection, we are all landing in unhealthy connection every day of the week. We as human beings have this survival button, let's call it, inside of us that acknowledges from the time we arrive on this earth, I must be in connection with another human being in order to survive. We cannot feed ourselves. We cannot clothe ourselves. We cannot soothe ourselves when we are 6 months old. And that button does not go anywhere. And so there is something in our wiring, in our DNA that acknowledges I must be in connection in order to stay alive. And when our two options are healthy or none, we are all, sorry, unhealthy or none, we are all going to land in unhealthy every day of the week. And so if there are preconceived messages, if we've ingested messages throughout our life about what love is supposed to look like, about our worth and value, about our having to perform in order to be deserving of love, about an expectation that we are going to be hurt or disappointed, about sort of what we are deserving of and what we aren't, we are all operating in many of these messages, often subconscious. And those messages support what it is that we are both attracted to and allow in. And so this is not actually about having a bad picker or about the person or people that we choose. It's about the operating system that we are responding from, often subconsciously being connected to ideas of what relationships can look like and do look like, what we are worthy of, where our value is and where it isn't, what we can expect and where we can expect to be let down, what it means to be deserving or undeserving of love, connection, how we become undeserving, right? We all have these significant messages. And if we haven't done some work to change the operating system, to change the story that we're operating from, we're going to continue to be drawn into and or even subconsciously attract the same kinds of traits or characteristics because there are parts of us that either believe that that is all that we are deserving of or that it is familiar because of the family system that we have grown up in and or any number of other reasons. And many of us focus on, I just need to choose better or I just need to be clear about the kind of person I want to pursue. And yet the work, when we notice these traits or these patterns, is really about what is it that's happening for me? Or what is the story that I'm operating from that somehow is continuing to allow me to end up in these situations? And how do I create a new story for myself?
Okay, so let's start talking about how do we create the new story? 100 people want to know that right off the top.
Yeah. So there are 1,000 different ways. And it's about planting seeds, right? That we have thousands of seeds that have contributed to the story that we're operating in. And so we are going to need a lot of new seeds and new information in order to shift out of that story. So this is not going to happen overnight. There's no magic pill. It's going to require our allowing ourselves to be compassionate with ourselves and patient with ourselves as we practice new ways of being. A couple of ways to do this. First and foremost, we evaluate where are the relationships in our lives that mirror unconditional love, connection, regard. It may not be an intimate partner. And yet if I have one friend or one coworker or one family member who I know I'm able to make mistakes with and it changes nothing about our relationship. I'm able to get it wrong sometimes. I'm able to own my stuff. They're able to own their stuff. They're also not a yes person. They're able to help me see hard things about myself and hold me accountable. If we have a safe person in our life, that is the best way to begin practicing a new story. And it could sound something like, hey, listen, I'm realizing that there's something in me that continues to believe that I am having to perform perfectly in order to be deserving of relationship. And I want to work on that. Would you help me in this way? And so we offer them information. And it could be, you know, when I call you and tell you that I've screwed up as a mom, as an employee, as a friend, as a partner, will you remind me that my worth and value is not based in being perfect and that I am deserving of connection no matter what? Will you help me to reevaluate what I'm saying yes to and no to? If I'm saying yes to you always, if I'm overly available to you, can you maybe check in with me from time to time and say, hey, like you're saying yes to this thing and that's great. And yet I want to just remind you that there's no expectation in this relationship to always be available. Are you really available tomorrow? Or is it better for you that you stay home and rest? When we have a safe person that we're able to ask for accountability from and sort of check in order to create a new truth for ourselves, that is one way that we have an opportunity to ingest something else as being a possibility. Another is if we get clear about what the messages are that we are operating from. Oh, I had to, in my household, remain quiet. There was no space for me. It wasn't safe to share my thoughts or feelings, or there was so much chaos happening in my home that I didn't want to add to the chaos.
Jessica, I'm going to hold on right there. This is awesome, but I got to take a break. We're going to be right back with more Saving and Steve and Jessica. Yeah, for the folks, stick with us. We'll be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show on UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Hey, Sal.
Hank, what's going on? We haven't worked a case in years.
I just bought my car at Carvana, and it was so easy. Too easy.
Think something's up?
You tell me. They got thousands of options.
Mm-hmm.
Found a great car at a great price.
Uh-huh.
And it got delivered the next day.
It sounds like Carvana just makes it easy to buy your car, Hank.
Yeah, you're right. Case closed.
Buy your car today on Carvana. Delivery fees may apply.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio.
Welcome back to the Saving with Steve show. I truly thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you letting your friends and families know about the show. All the replays are available on savingwithsteve.us, and you want to go see this one. It's episode 266. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information and insight on Saving with Steve, I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Never miss a show. Check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, AMFM 360, E360 TV, and Las Vegas TV Networks. They're all dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal financial freedom. So let's get back to Jessica. Jessica, one of the big ahas that you said was for people to find that safe person that truly cares, loves you for who you are, willing to say, you know what, you didn't do that right. Okay. You might want to consider it doing this way, but you have no loss of friendship or relationship. And they're also somebody who's going to say, come on, you're better than that. Or, you know what, you're good. You should, you could do that. Yeah. You know what? So I think that's a gigantic aha, because a lot of people don't realize they have somebody like that.
Yes.
And I think that's very, very, very cool. So let's continue on with what you were talking about on the next piece to take a look at there.
Yeah. So the next piece is that when we get clear about our operating system, oh man, I believed that I had to stay quiet, or I believed that I had to perform perfectly in order to be deserving of connection, or I had this experience in previous relationships where if I made a mistake, I became abandoned or rejected. We have an opportunity once we get clear about the part of us that we want to shift out of to look for new ways to create a different story. So it might be something like, you know, I recognize that I have a couple people in my life that I can now practice this with. I'm going to say no and just notice what comes back to me. Or I'm sorry, I thought I was available for this thing and it turns out I'm not. And then recognize that I'm still available for connection. I am still getting invites from them. I'm still a part of their group, right? I haven't been rejected or abandoned. I might even say, hey, there's something hard I want to talk about. And historically, I've not been able to share about my thoughts and feelings. It hasn't been safe for me to do so. So this feels really scary. And yet I trust that we have the kind of relationship where I'm able to do that. I feel a little disappointed about you not being able to show up for me last week, or I'm recognizing that my feelings are a little hurt that you canceled last minute on my birthday. And yet, like, I care about you enough to kind of practice these kinds of conversations together. And then we watch what comes back to us, right? It's ownership from that person. I'm so sorry. And thank you for sharing that with me. And that wasn't my intention. And how can I make it right? Rather than feeling patronized or rejected or shamed. Those are what we call corrective experiences. And when we have corrective experiences, it allows our system the opportunity to consider, maybe something else is true. The story that I've been operating in for all this time has felt really true for all of these years. And yet in this moment, it's not true. So is something else potentially possible? And the more of those moments we have, the greater this new story becomes.
You know what? I think one of the big issues with this is the idea of being perfect. Mm-hmm. I've had a number of people write in and they said, you know what? For some reason, I felt I wasn't perfect. So when I got the response I got, I thought it was because I didn't do the right thing. Yeah. And I thought to myself when I read that, and I read it in different ways and multiple times, I was like, oh, now I really understand where somebody's coming from. If, you know, they could be the perfect person, everybody thinks they are, but if they don't think they are, there you go. So you have to give yourself that grace, so to speak.
100%. And I will say, Steve, that none of us are perfect, and that shouldn't be what we are striving for. And yet many of us, myself included, have been in relationships where we are blamed for everything that goes wrong and are made to believe that if we could just show up just right or be perfect, that the relationship would be okay. And yet it's not about us when we're in toxic or unhealthy or abusive relationships, there's always going to be something else, right? And yet we actually ingest messages and are made to believe that if we could just perform better or do better or show up right or not have said that thing, then everything would be okay. And so we have to work our way out of that belief. And there's something that I subscribe to called attachment theory. It's kind of the basis of the way that I practice in my coaching business. And attachment theory says that as human beings, 30% of the time, we're going to get it just right. We're going to know exactly what to say. We're going to know exactly what another person needs. We're going to be able to say it in exactly the way in which they are feeling sort of most responsive. We're going to be able to anticipate needs 30% of the time. 70% of the time, we're going to get it wrong. Most of us try to increase that 30%. We have an expectation of ourselves even that we need to hit 100%. And yet attachment theory says that the way that we actually engage in safe, meaningful, intimate connection is how we handle the 70%. It's not in growing the 30%. So in moments where we're able to practice in safe relationships saying, I got that wrong and I'm sorry, or I missed that opportunity and that's my bad, or I'm telling myself right now that I've just really blown it with you. And can we talk about that for a minute? Or, hey, I lost my temper and I want to own that. And I'm wondering if we can have a do-over. In those moments with our kids, with our colleagues, with our intimate partners, with our aging parents, with our friends, it is in those moments that we actually create an opportunity for a level of vulnerability and connection that is the most meaningful kind of exchange that we can have. It's not about performing perfectly.
No, I think that's great. I just keep thinking about what you said is even in the business world, I remember when I first started, became that manager, got promoted and everything. I was listening to my boss while we were talking to somebody and it was a disciplinary thing. And I thought, damn, he did that really well, or she did that really well. And I'm like, gosh, I got to get really good at this. But you know, I did okay. but I realized I was never going to be somebody else. And it was grateful for that because, it worked out really well. And I learned how to have a better conversation, and I learned how to get more information before having that conversation, as opposed to just having that conversation, if that makes sense, more in preparation, which made a better conversation and still didn't get it completely like you said. So that was very, 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 very interesting. So now that people realize, hey, I'm finding a safe space. I'm learning to have these communications. I'm learning to deal with my mess ups and saying, hey, I did that wrong. Yep. So what's the next part?
Yeah. The next part is working on getting clear about our negotiables and non-negotiables. Because often what happens in relationship is we start out feeling really clear. I'm never going to deal with that again, right? I'm never going to deal with betrayal. I'm never going to deal with abusive language. I'm never going to deal with someone not showing up when they say that they're going to show up. I'm never going to deal with being ghosted. And we're really clear about these things. And then we meet someone and they're fantastic initially. And we start to feel really connected and we're having these really lovely experiences and we're getting that really wonderful dopamine hit that comes along with some of the new relationship stuff. And then they don't call for a few days, or we have an argument and they say some really hurtful things. And we begin to justify their behavior and or minimize our needs. Oh man, it only happened that one time. They're so great otherwise. Or, you know, I said this was a non-negotiable, that I really needed to be with someone who wanted kids, but maybe it's not all that important to me. There are so many other great things about this person. Maybe I can sacrifice my desire to have kids, given that they're so great in all of these other ways. And so we start to be willing to really compromise what we have identified initially as a non-negotiable. When we do some work in advance of becoming connected to someone and get really clear about our negotiables and non-negotiables first, not while we're in the relationship, then we have an opportunity to check in with ourselves along the way. So if I say, I must be in a relationship with someone, for example, who is consistent, I need to be able to trust them and I need to know that they're going to show up when they say they're going to show up. That is a non-negotiable for me. That is a deal breaker. And then I begin dating someone and I notice over time that they are starting to become less consistent. And I recognize that I'm beginning to make excuses. Oh, well, like they do have a lot going on with work, or, oh, I know that they've got this other thing happening with a family member. And so like, I get that they're not available or forgot to call, et cetera. And sure, these things happen as one-offs, right? And yet it's starting to become a pattern. And I'm finding myself making excuses, minimizing, being willing to sacrifice my own needs. And I now have an opportunity to check in with myself. I named before I met this person, or as I entered into this relationship, I had already determined that this was a non-negotiable. What's happening for me in this moment? Why am I moving my non-negotiables to negotiables? Is it that I don't feel worthy of being shown up for? Is it that I am struggling to hold a boundary because I haven't learned how to do that well, or haven't felt like I am deserving of having needs and upholding my needs? Is it because I'm putting their needs before my needs in the way that I've done in the past? So we are able to use this as sort of a checks and balance, if you will. It's an accountability plan, right? And it doesn't mean that we won't have moments of sort of questioning, right? Am I moving this from my non-negotiable to my negotiable category because something has changed for me? My value system has changed. My circumstances have changed. I've grown into a new place of being, and things that were important to me are now less important, but there are other things that are now more important. So it's not that we can't move these things around. But if we notice that we're moving something from a non-negotiable to a negotiable category in order to make a relationship work, not from a place of intention, or in order to meet another person's need, or in order to avoid conflict, those are opportunities for us to really check in with ourselves and say, hey, I seem to maybe be falling into this old pattern. And is this an opportunity for me to get clear about what's happening for me before I end up a year, two, three, five down the road? And that's a really good time to have a conversation with our safe people, to involve a coach or a therapist, so that we have some support in evaluating what it is that we're recognizing about how it is that we're showing up.
That's perfect. We're talking about relationship with Jessica. One of the big things here is she just talked about how people are trying to go have the relationship they want, and then something happens, and then people basically kind of rationalize their minimums, so to speak, away, and here they're back in the same thing. And the key to that step, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jessica, is to really go back to your safe space, that person who is your reality checks in some cases, to help you through and make sure you're in the right spot so you can actually have that conversation with that person or say, hey, this isn't for me, goodbye. So one of the big things here is the next step is, what are the indicators that you're actually ready to start dating?
Yeah. Great question. So this can look a little different for each person. This is somewhat individualized. And yet when I think about sort of some general things to be thinking about, evaluating, et cetera, they would be these. First and foremost, am I feeling like I need to date again because I'm feeling empty, because I'm looking for someone else to fill something for me, versus am I feeling whole and complete and grounded and connected to myself? And now ready to explore what it would feel like to offer this really full version of myself to someone else with the idea that it can enhance my life in these really lovely ways rather than fix something for me and or make something feel better for me. So that is kind of my first suggestion, is that we ask ourselves, what is the motivation? Is it that I'm feeling really empty, that I'm feeling really lost, that I'm feeling as though I need to fill a hole?
Or just lonely.
Or is it that I am at a place where I feel like I have really regrounded in myself and I'm feeling connected and confident and secure and alive in all of these other parts of my life? And I now feel ready to add to my life in a way that is going to feel complementary rather than to save me, if you will. Second is that we ensure that we're really clear about the parts of our relational history that have felt really good that we'd like to recreate, and the parts that we are really clear that we don't want to recreate. And have we looked at and gotten clear about some of those patterns that we've talked about in a way that supports us in being able to do some ongoing self-evaluation, and do we have some accountability in place in order to ensure that we're checking in really regularly with ourselves and others around the choices and decisions that we're making? Number two. Mm-hmm. And I'd say that number three is, are we in a place where we are not looking to replace a person or an experience, but really move into a new experience? If we feel like we're trying to replace someone that maybe we've lost, and or replace a relationship that we are still really grieving and haven't yet gotten clear about the fact that there will continue to be a space to grieve the loss of individuals, relationships, et cetera, while also being really clear that stepping into dating is really about creating new experiences, not going back to old experiences, is a really important delineation. And so checking in with ourselves around sort of where we are in our grief process and the motivator around moving into dating, specific to that piece, really important. And then I'd say lastly, do we have other relationships in our lives that are feeling fulfilling and safe and connected? Because if we're looking for a dating partner to fill all of those places for us, that becomes a setup. And so we want to ensure that there are other parts of our life, whether it be spiritual connection, whether it be friendships, whether it be a fulfilling work life, whether it be the way in which we're taking care of our body, that we feel connected in many of these other ways to ensure that we aren't looking for another individual in order to be all of those things for us.
Yeah, because it's really hard to keep up with somebody you don't know anything about.
Also true. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that that's really important that because when you go into something to fill a void, it's like you're employing somebody.
Yeah.
And if you're doing it to enhance your life, it's about enhancing your happiness, your whole being. So I think it comes from a completely different place, whether you're a man or a female, that it's really, really significant. That's a great, great piece for everybody to understand. So that's wonderful advice. Hey folks, stick with us. We're going to be right back with more Jessica Yaffa.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything under the sun. We're talking about surviving divorce, losing a spouse, dating. And we have Jessica Yaffa. It's been wonderful. This is like the aha moments. So Jessica, one of the things that many of our listeners and viewers ask is that, you know, whether it's been 5, 10 years, sometimes longer since they started dating, either because they went through a divorce, lost a spouse, didn't think they're ready. They believe they're ready. They're starting to meet people. When should the intimacy stuff start coming out?
Yeah.
When should they engage, so to speak?
Great question. So similar to some of the other parts of the conversation that we've had thus far, Steve, I would say that this A is really personal, and B, something that we get to kind of think about in advance. So some questions that I might suggest that we ask ourselves if we're kind of moving back into the dating scene are questions like, what would some indicators be that I'm ready to be intimate with someone new? What conversations have we had? What do I know about them? What have I been able to share about myself? What sorts of experiences have we had together thus far? What's going to feel important to me to be able to know and or have experienced and or share in order to feel like I might be ready? Those sorts of questions are really helpful for us because it supports us in not getting caught up in a moment. And it also supports us in being able to communicate some of that to a new potential partner. And in communicating that, it's an opportunity for us to determine, are we aligned in this, right? So if I am saying, you know, it's date three, let's say, and we're having a really good time and we're getting to know one another and we've shared certain parts of ourselves and we've had really meaningful conversation, and it feels like we're sort of moving to kind of the next phase of the relationship, I have an opportunity to ask them, like, where do you stand, right, on intimacy in a new dating relationship? Like, do you have thoughts about how you might gauge when you're ready? So we're able to ask the other person. And as that person then shares whatever they share with us, we're able to determine, does that align for us? If they say, oh yeah, I feel like I need to wait at least a year. And yet we recognize physical intimacy is really important to me. And I'm feeling like as long as we've had conversations about safety, as long as we've had conversations, let's say, about monogamy, as long as we've been able to share about our vulnerabilities when it comes to sharing our bodies with someone, that we've had the opportunity to share about core values, at that point, I'm ready. And I imagine that that's probably 4 to 6 dates in. And yet this person is saying, I'm waiting at least a year. Then we have an opportunity to determine, is this a non-negotiable for me? And or is this something that I'm able to really work with if there are other ways in which we can experience intimacy? So having that information for ourselves ahead of time and also offering others the opportunity to share about their needs, their wants, their expectations supports us in being intentional about moving into that place rather than it just sort of being a one-off and then having judgment of ourselves or feeling regretful and or feeling like we're in a position of experiencing pressure. So the more intentional we can be about this piece, the better for both people. And I think then the second, Steve, would be really acknowledging that all spaces surrounding dating experience or relational experience requires us to be really clear about the fact that we have the right to change our mind about anything at any given moment. And that the people that we're in relationship with also have the right to change their mind. And so we have an opportunity to also ask ourselves, what would be some indicators that I'm not ready? Or if I feel like I'm ready and I kind of move into this space and then I determine that maybe I'm not, how do I want to handle that? So using our accountability partner, a coach, a therapist, journaling to really sort of sort through what would be some indicators that I'm ready, what's important to me to know about the other person, and what happens if I end up in a situation where I feel like I want to change my mind? Can I in advance be prepared with how I want to handle that? How might I communicate that? What might I want to say? And what do I expect to receive in return that would help me to know that this is someone that I'm safe moving forward with?
I think that's wonderful. You get to find out whether somebody's, I want to say 100% into the relationship just like you are, or are they not? And that helps you make a good decision, especially if you're not comfortable.
Right.
So I think that's wonderful to say that. And I appreciate you sharing that because that was a lot of questions around that. Yeah. Now, let's talk about, I call it deal killers. you know what? Many people are worried about dating sites and all that kind of stuff. What are the big things to look out for?
So when we talk about like red flags or automatic deal breakers, first of all, again, some of this is going to be standard stuff. Some of this is going to be individual. The standard stuff would be things like this person in their profile is displaying all sorts of information that indicates that they are not for me. And yet they're cute or there's something that intrigues me, right? We want to be really mindful of like there's on the surface, all sorts of information that's available to me that indicates that this is not my person or someone that I want to explore. And yet I'm feeling intrigued or there's something based on sort of my past that is enticing me here. We want to be able to check in with ourselves in those moments. Second, if someone is using derogatory language, is really clear about if we're interested in a relationship and someone is saying, I'm just interested in, you know, a friend with benefits situation or hookups, that is an immediate indicator for us, right? That they are not aligned with kind of what feels important to us or what we're looking for. So we want to just be aware of that kind of messaging and how that lines up with where we are or where we aren't. Third, we want to really be mindful of someone who's not sharing anything about themselves and only sharing about what they expect from others. So there are some profiles where people will not share anything about who they are, about what they're interested in, about what matters most to them, about what their value system is, about their family. And they are only saying, I want someone who is this and who is this and who is this, without any opportunity for vulnerability or self-disclosure on their end. That tends to be an indicator, not always, but it tends to be an indicator that there's not a whole lot of depth or self-awareness or ability to be self-reflective. And so I tend to be cautious about a profile that is sort of forward-facing without the opportunity to offer reciprocal vulnerability. And then I would also
say, what you're really saying is that's somebody that's more self-centered and it's just like transactional with a relationship.
Correct.
Okay.
And if someone is really focused on things like, I'm looking for someone who weighs this, who looks like this.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I mean, it's going to work.
Things are obvious indicators, right? That's going to be a setup for us, no matter our gender orientation. Mm-hmm. And then I would say beyond that, anyone who, again, depending on what we're looking for and what matters to us, if we start to engage with someone and really quickly they are wanting to have sexual conversations or they're love bombing us. Oh my God, I think I have found the one. And we've had two conversations at that point, right? Those are indicators that we are likely going to be misaligned and that some of that toxicity that we're really working hard to stay away from could potentially show up given kind of the dynamic that we're already beginning to witness or experience. So those are the sorts of things that I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Also, the love bombing, from what I understand, is one of the ways that the like internet scammers, romance scammers, really use to entice people to take advantage of them. So if that's occurring, you just got to watch out.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
So let's do this. I would like you to talk a little bit about what you do and how you help people. And then let's finish up with how people can get a hold of you, how they can connect with you or your nonprofit, the whole shot.
For sure. Thanks, Steve. So I, myself and my institute, I have other coaches that have beautiful specialties and that support individuals, couples, families as well, offer services to individuals, couples, families, and organizations around healthy relational development. So for couples, families, organizations who are struggling to navigate conflict, who are feeling disconnected from one another, who are getting stuck in some of the same patterns, who don't know how to offer feedback to one another in ways that can be received without there being harm or destruction in the relationship. All really beautiful opportunities for us to support, as well as family systems, whether it be siblings, parents and kids, adult children and aging parents. There's something really beautiful that happens when we're able to do work with kind of the entire construct. And because we do virtual coaching and because we are under the coaching umbrella and not therapy umbrella, we can work with people all over. So we can have folks in different parts of the country or even internationally. And that's a real benefit of being sort of under the coaching umbrella. And then in terms of the nonprofit, No Silence, No Violence, we support survivors of domestic violence. And so that is through free support groups. That is through creating a bridge and getting them to therapists who specialize in domestic violence or trauma. We can even pay for that therapy when the budget permits, access to legal resources, supporting them with things like transitional transportation and or housing, even when the budget permits. No Silence, No Violence is really positioned to be a gap filler for other organizations that are having to say no We don't take federal or state funds. We want to be able to move quickly, and we want to be able to say yes to the things that most other organizations are not able to say yes to. So we rely on donations from individuals, foundations, et cetera. And so a lot of what we're able to do financially is dependent on the dollars that are coming in. And yet we are always willing to be the bridge to services. And then the other thing that No Silence, No Violence does is offer education to schools, whether it be middle schools, high schools, college campuses, hospital settings, healthcare settings, military, around the ways in which we prevent and intervene early as it pertains to domestic violence. We really want to get on the front end of this thing in addition to supporting those who are in crisis. And then in terms of how you get a hold of me, email is great, jessica@jessicayaffa.org. My website is www.jessicayaffa.org. And our Facebook pages are now linked, Steve. And so that's always a good way to connect, as well as Instagram. Perfect. With Jessica Yaffa Coaching Institute.
Jessica, I want to thank you for being here. And if you're listening now, we're going to put the link for No Silence, No Violence on our website. We're going to put Jessica's information on our website. So if you're looking for help for domestic violence, please go there. If you want the support, please go there. If you want to get a hold of Jessica and her team to get your help, please go there. And Jessica, again, I want to thank you for being here. And this has been just tons of aha moments, just based off the questions I received and the things you provided. It's just that I'm going to say a different level than other people I've spoken with. So thank you very, very much.
Thanks so much for having me, Steve.
Look forward to seeing you next time right here on Saving with Steve. With that, I wish you all well.
Thank you for joining us on the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQBar plant protein bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQBars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.